King David penned these words a long time ago about a different king, a king who was to come, a king who would be crucified. This was precisely the scene at Golgotha, as bands of enemies surrounded Jesus. They fixed their eyes on him, their target, and they let their arrows fly. But who was he to them? Why did they care who he was? Why did they care who he claimed to be? Who was he to them that they would so mock him and ridicule him and challenge him? You know, to some who were there surrounding Jesus that day, Jesus was just a liar. He made it all up. To others, they considered him to be a lunatic with delusions of grandeur. What other options are there? Either he's a liar or he's a lunatic. There's no other option except that he is who he claims to be, that he is Lord of all. C.S. Lewis and other people throughout history have commented that these are your only options. Either Jesus is a liar, he's a lunatic, or he is Lord of all. And in recent history, people have added a fourth option, legend, that others have made up, you know, all this stuff about him. But you can't really have it any other way. There's no other in-betweens other than these four, especially considering what Jesus says about himself. He claims to be the Son of God, sent into the world to save the world from its sins, and that he will die and rise 3 days later, and he will come again and judge all the world for their deeds. A person that claims that kind of identity can only be either a liar, a lunatic, the stuff of legend, or who he says he is, the Lord of all. And over, history, the true, honest study of history and philosophy and logic and psychology and literary criticism, all of them have proven again and again that there's only one viable option of these four, and that is that Jesus is who he claims to be. He is Lord of all. He is Christ the King. You know, no matter what other people say about him, no matter what people that are his followers say and do at times in their lives, no matter the sad state of affairs in our world, no matter perhaps the sad state of affairs in your own life or in the life of your church, it remains true. Jesus is Lord of all. And as we'll see, there's great comfort in that. And that makes all the difference to us, both as individuals and as a church family. So, bands of enemies, the ring of villains, Jesus that day on Golgotha. Ring after ring of villains targeted him. And on that outer ring of villains, we see the Jewish rulers mocking Jesus with messianic titles. God's Messiah, the Chosen One, oblivious to the fact that they are attributing in a mocking way these titles to Jesus, and they are perfectly accurate. Never mind that the facts of Jesus' life, the words that he spoke, the actions that he took, and all of the things that were happening that day on Golgotha were fulfilling prophecies of the coming Messiah. He perfectly, in his life and words and deeds, encapsulated those titles, God's Messiah, the Chosen One. But they could not see him for the Messiah and the King that he was, because they were looking for the wrong Messiah, the wrong King. They were watching and waiting for a king of glory and a kingdom of glory, but Christ's is a kingdom of grace. And so they could not see him for who he really was. They couldn't see this man on the cross for who he was, Christ on the throne, his true identity. You move in closer, one ring of enemies targeting out Jesus, and you find the soldiers. And they're mocking Jesus just the same, calling him names, challenging him to wield his power and come down from the cross if he's such a king. They too failed to see Jesus for the king that he was, because they were looking for a king of glory, a king of earthly might and power, not a king of grace. A king who suffers and dies, he must be no king at all in their minds. That's all that they can reason. They couldn't see him for who. But let's move even closer in. And what do we find? We find literally a placard with writing on it that says, "This is the King of the Jews," put there by Pontius Pilate. And the irony is entirely lost on Pilate and all the rest, that this placard speaks the truth. This is the King of the Jews. But they fail to see Jesus for the king that he is, because they're looking for a king of glory, not a king of grace. But let's move in even closer to one of the criminals that's on a cross next to Jesus, who is mocking him just the same, challenging him to be the king that he is and to rescue himself and them. It's not a plea for help. It's not a cry for help. It's more mockery. More of the same, all the way from the outskirts of Golgotha, all the way to the center, to that cross next to Jesus and to the placard right above his head. They have all targeted him. And the mockery and the ridicule and the blasphemy continue. Because none can see Jesus for the king that he is. Not a king of glory, but a king of grace. But we have forgotten one group. We have forgotten the group that is on the far outskirts of Golgotha. Luke mentions them first. He says of them this, "The people stood watching." The people don't appear to be saying anything. They don't appear to be mocking Jesus. They don't appear to be ridiculing him or challenging him to come down from the cross and save himself. They just stand there watching from the farthest distance, it would seem. And you know, maybe these people are like all those people, so many people in the world, who want to keep Jesus at a distance, who want to just step back from the argument entirely and say, "Hey, I'm not involved here. I have no opinion about the man." They want to remain neutral toward Jesus. But you can't be neutral to Jesus. He himself said it. He said, "Whoever is not with me is against me." You see, you have two options when it comes to Jesus and the way that you think about him and your relationship to him. You have two options. And it's either Jesus is my king or Jesus is not my king. There's no in between. He can't just be this good moral teacher. Because look at the things he said about himself. He can only be a liar, a lunatic, the stuff of legend, or Lord of all. And all of these lumped him into some category other than Lord of all. And so any and all who look on Jesus with supposed neutrality and thought that they could just abstain from the argument and abstain from having an opinion of him, well, they are guilty too. And they have targeted him too. They have rejected him as their king because they have held out for a king of glory instead of a king of grace. Jesus is not a king of glory. He is that king reigning and ruling over a kingdom of grace. Reigning and ruling not by the sword or the scepter. And so despite all appearances, despite all the outward appearances of Jesus' life, despite all the outward appearances of his suffering and his death, here's the thing. This Christ and King is exercising his kingship, yes, even from the cross. He is ruling in his kingdom of grace. The cross is exactly where Jesus intended to be right then and there. In other words, in that moment, everything was going his way. This is Jesus' work, after all, as king. What does a king do except protect his people from their enemies, conquer his enemies for them? And this Jesus did by conquering on the cross our sin, and the devil and death. This is what kings do. And he didn't do this as a king of glory. He did it as a king of grace, lacking all glory. And so what kind of kingdom do you want Jesus to be in your life? Are you waiting for him to be a king of glory? Or do you see him as a king of grace? Are you waiting for him to come in his almighty power and wield his and wave his scepter and make your life easier? Are you waiting for him to exercise his power and put your enemies in their place, all the people who make your life more difficult? Are you waiting for him to wield sword and scepter and give you the life that you deserve, the life that you've always wanted for yourself? Friends, it's a kingdom of grace, not a kingdom of glory. And what kind of kingdom do you expect of him? Because the kingdom of glory is yet to come. We still live under a kingdom of grace. And that means that we, as his church here on earth, as a royal family of his believers, as brothers and sisters of Christ the King, we ain't gonna always look so glorious. You know, sometimes I think people expect a kingdom of glory on earth when it comes to the church on earth. They have such high expectations for Christ's kingdom and Christ's family of believers that it's just unrealistic. You ever talk to somebody who stopped coming to church and ask them why? Maybe one of the more common answers that you get is, well, the church is just full of hypocrites anyway, right? But it's a kingdom of grace. It's not a kingdom of glory. And maybe we all struggle with that, right? Because maybe sometimes we don't feel like showing up too because of something that's happened between us and somebody else here. It's a kingdom of grace, not of glory. Well, maybe we expect too much then sometimes out of this kingdom of grace, out of this royal family of believers that's made up of us brothers and sisters of Christ the King. If it happens in an earthly family and in earthly homes, if they're a mess, isn't it true of our church family? Isn't it sometimes kind of messy? And don't we at times not treat one another so Christ-like? Don't we sometimes put ourselves above one another? Don't we expect sometimes too much of each other? Don't we expect sometimes that our ministers and our teachers and our principal and our staff and sometimes even our volunteers, don't we expect them to be top-notch and weakness-free and endlessly gifted and always patient and ever-present mirrors of Jesus himself? But it's just not possible, and it's not a standard that anybody can live up to. Thank God we don't have to. Thank God his son lived up to that standard for us. Friends, that means to the east, not a kingdom of glory. And that means this, that means to the extent that Jesus our king, and we extend that grace to us, to that same extent, we extend that grace and forgiveness to one another. After all, that's the whole reason why a king was put on a cross in the first place. It was the greatest act of grace. It was the greatest act of undeserved love for a world of sinners. As the Bible tells us, while we were still sinners, Christ loved us and died for us. And we see that love so clearly as he speaks to that criminal on the cross next to him. You know, both criminals heaped insults on Jesus when they first got up there. Well, one of them began to defend Jesus and began to rebuke the others who were mocking him. And he began to speak to Jesus as a loyal subject speaks to a beloved king. He saw in Jesus a king lacking all glory, but full of grace and truth. And he pleaded with him. Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And his king, this King Jesus, bestowed on him such grace and truth. Truly, I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise. And you know, that's when the tide began to turn. That's when the mockery and the blasphemy started to turn. Maybe the tipping point was that criminal's confession of faith there. Well, maybe it was the placard put there by Pilate that proclaimed the perfect truth. Maybe it was words that Jesus spoke, kingly words from the cross, words of grace, words of forgiveness. Maybe it was words that people remembered he had spoken on the road and in the towns to the masses. The tide of mockery and the tide of ridicule and blasphemy began to turn. Because first it was the criminal, and then it was one of those soldiers, a centurion, who after Jesus died, stood at the foot of the cross and said, "Surely he was the Son of God." And as you continue to move outward in that ring of enemies and villains, you see the rulers, the Jewish rulers, and you think to yourself, there's no way any of them will swallow their pride and bend the knee to King Jesus. But that day, two of them did. They carried their dead king to his tomb, and they prepared his body for burial. Here's the crazy thing with all of this. In all of this, as Jesus lay dead in the tomb, in some way and in some sense, he was still reigning on his throne. And as Jesus lay dead in the tomb, in the grave, everything was still going his way. And as Jesus lay dead in the tomb, he still loved us. Because he had conquered our enemies of sin and the devil. And 3 days later, he would conquer death itself. And you know, most of us know what happened right after that. Word of this Jesus, this risen king, it went out to all the masses. It spread like wildfire. And that word reached across time and across history and across space to you and me. It spread on the heels and on the lips of those that Christ made his love known to. And now he is our king. And now we live under him in his kingdom of grace. And this is our identity. And this is our work. We are brothers and sisters of Christ, our king. We're members of this royal family of believers together. And it's on our lips and it's on our heels that we carry that same gospel of Christ, the risen king, reigning in his kingdom of grace. This is how our king rules. This is how our king rolls. This is what he does. He takes all weapons targeted against him, and he turns them around for the good of his kingdom and for the glory of his name. No, our identity as believers and our work as believers and brothers and sisters of Christ, as members of this royal family, it's not going to always feel glorious. It's not always going to look glorious. But let's remember, the kingdom of glory is yet to come, but it is coming. One day Jesus will come in all his power and glory, and with all his holy angels, and he will usher in that final glorious kingdom, and glorious it will be, and perfect it will be. But until then, it's a kingdom of grace. And we live under a king of grace. And that means that he continues to shower grace upon us as we then in turn shower it on one another. Heard a true story about a guy who always answers the question, "How are you doing?" The same way. No matter how it's asked, "How you doing? How's life? How's it going?" He always answers it the same way. And it doesn't matter how his life is going, good or bad. Doesn't matter how the current state of affairs in the world is. Doesn't matter the current state of affairs in his family or in his church body. Every time the question is asked of him, "How's it going? How are you doing?" he answers it the same way every time. And this is what he's known for. May our answer to that question be the same? Whether that answer is a reply on our lips or just a reply held in our hearts, no matter the sad state of affairs in the world or in our lives, no matter how good or bad things are for us at the time, may we answer the same way in our lips or with our lips or with our hearts when someone asks us how we're doing. Christ is on his throne, and everything is going his way, and he loves me. Amen.